On This Week in Enterprise Tech, Mr. Brian Chi joins me on the show today. Now, we've talked about how the pandemic has impacted our home networks. Are we losing control of our home devices, especially the IoT ones? We'll talk about it. Plus, there are plenty of organizations globally that are still managing and building infrastructure to manage their business. Now, today we have Sachi Thompson, Global Manager of the Hardware Division of Curvature. And we're going to talk about the growing need for hardware and just what your organization needs to do to handle it. Definitely shouldn't miss it. It's quiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 506, recorded August 12th, 2022. Real IT hardware has curvature. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by IRL, an original podcast from Mozilla. IRL is a show for people who build AI and people who develop tech policies. Hosted by Bridget Todd, this season of IRL looks at AI in real life. Search for IRL in your podcast player. And by userway.org. Userway is the world's number one accessibility solution and is committed to enabling the fundamental human right of digital accessibility for everyone. When you're ready to make your site compliant, deciding which solution to use is easy choice to make. Go to userway.org/twit for 30% off Userway's AI-powered accessibility solution. And by IT Pro TV. Give your team an engaging IT development platform to level up their skills. Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise. Make sure to mention Enterprise 30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in a professional and an expert. He's net architect, a Sky Fiber network expert, security connoisseur, plus all-around tech geek, and he's Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, how are you, my friend?
In fact, in honor of our guest, this is a Ubiquiti router. It's called an AirCube. It's designed for ISPs, so it's got all the special hooks in it so that from a single management console, I can push configs out to it. The company I bought it from, Use, well, this is actually pre-owned. It was actually still sealed in the wrapper. they're getting rid of them because these versions can only talk IPv4 on the wide area network port, whereas the new ones can talk IPv6, and that's getting in prepared because there's no more IPv4 address space left, so you're going to need to play IPv6 instead. So I'm going to be playing with that, and I'm going to be using them at Maker Faire Orlando, which is November 5th and 6th, and it ought to be lots and lots of fun.
Speaking of fun, have you heard of Curtis over in Sin City? Has he survived Black Hat?
Well, he tells me that trying to get over to Caesars for DEF CON, that he had some detours because the water has washed a big pile of furniture and debris out of the hotels into the street. Kurt is fine, so don't worry, but it's going to make it very entertaining this year, is his words.
Indeed. We'll have to hear some of his stories when he gets back. So while Curtis is gallivanting across Sin City, we get to report about the IT and enterprise news for the week. So let's get started because there's lots going on from Black Hat and DEF CON. Thank you for being here, Brian. Now, we'll start by digging into the impact that the pandemic has had on our homes. Have we let down our guards since we've moved in and you know, started working and living at home as well? Have we lost control of maybe all of our smart devices in our dwelling? Well, we're going to get into that. Talk about that a little bit more. Plus, there are plenty of organizations globally that are still managing and building their own infrastructure and managing their business. I talk with them daily, and at the forefront is ensuring they can actually scale and as well as update their hardware in a more really cost-effective way. Today, we have Sachi Thompson, Global Manager of the Hardware Division at Curvature. And we're going to talk about the growing need for hardware and just what your organization needs to do about it. Lots of exciting stuff, so definitely stick around. But first, like we always do, let's go ahead and jump into this week's news blips. Now, we had an entire episode on private 5G recently, but here comes Amazon surprising us out of the gate. They have launched AWS private 5G. Question is, what's their angle here? According to them, they designed the service to help companies build their own 5G networks. However, regardless of the name or the press on it, it currently only supports 4G. Wah, wah. It makes me think about that. Well, what they might be looking into and what they might be actually releasing to the wild seems too early. Now, if your organization was interested in getting your foot in the door at the ground level, AWS makes it easy. You would order the hardware, including the radios and special SIMs, directly from AWS. Now, AWS then provides the necessary software and APIs to get you up and running. It integrates well with the AWS management console so you can plan out capacity and automate things. It also works well with the services like the identity and access management offerings that are out there. It also integrates with CloudWatch, which is an observability service to provide a network health and other analytics. Now, if nothing else, it sounds intriguing for organizations who did not want to go at it alone, right? One big thing that the new service also does is it's fully integrated in the SaaS administration process with AWS managing everything on behalf of the customer, including taking on responsibility for interference issues, among other troubleshooting tidbits relating to spectrum access. Now, when it does roll out, it will only be available in the U.S. East, including Ohio and Virginia, and the U.S. West and Oregon. But they're looking to roll it out internationally very soon. Now, what does this signal? Well, it signals that if Amazon gets into the game here, it means that things are just going to start trending in that direction. I'm curious to see where it goes.
All right. So I have to preface this story. I am purposely not naming names because it is still only a single social media post and it has not been confirmed. But this comes from the folks at Black Hat, and a bunch of little birds shared a tidbit that apparently someone has forgotten the lessons learned over many, many decades of doing trade show Wi-Fi. So the rumor was posted to social media and is yet to be confirmed that someone at a major trade show was able to unplug a Wi-Fi access point, plug in a laptop, and get access to the backbone for Black Hat. They then say they were able to get wide access to the production show network. I suspect we'll hear quite a bit more about this as the story develops and it is either confirmed or denied. Well, our co-host, Heather Mo Williams, relayed a tip from a friend and suggested that if you have a ruckus Wi-Fi infrastructure, that you should run the command link-error-disable --1--0 for the config on that port if your install script hasn't done it already. Now, what's interesting is that I found similar commands in quite a few switch operating systems. And if you're running something a little lesser, you can easily achieve similar results by limiting connections to the MAC address of the access point connected to that physical port. Well, Interop has been doing Wi-Fi for a very long time. In fact, the first time we did it was using Spectrum, and it was 802.11b as in boy, and 10 meg per second Wi-Fi was the best we could do. We learned a lot of things about that, not the least of which is that trade show speakers, trade show attendees sometimes get kind of frustrated, especially if the Wi-Fi is not working as well as it could, and they unplug the Wi-Fi access point in hopes of getting more bandwidth to be able to access whatever they need to get. Well, at this case, someone did that, and they got in. And I kind of question, without naming the company, their provisioning process has this feature, and it makes me wonder why that feature got skipped. And I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about it. This, I believe, is only a six-hour-old story. Take care.
Now, this Ars Technica story is too good not to cover. Anytime someone can stick it to companies like Comcast, I read them. Now, this one is about a network architect by the name of Jared Mauch. He wanted to upgrade his home internet, but due to monopolies and excuses by local providers, he was boxed in. Now, Comcast even told him it would cost $50,000 to expand the network to his house. Seems like a lot to me. Now, Jared was willing to actually spend $10,000 to make it happen, but that had a sticker shock from Comcast's proposition. made him kind of lean to the other direction. Now, when Comcast asks you to pay $3K to shut off your 100 megabit internet connection as a business customer, I'm not surprised they would want potential new customers to pay $50K because that's how backwards sometimes they run their business. But internet in rural areas is definitely not cheap, or sometimes it's not even available. And it makes sense that Jared was willing to pay and go the extra mile, literally to make this all work. Now, what he did do is instead of paying the devil to expand his internet, he started his own internet provider company instead. Good for Jared. Now, it wasn't cheap venture here, costing Jared around $145,000, going most to contractors laying the fiber. But he was able to actually curb the cost by doing some of the physical labor himself. He's able to lay 2 miles of fiber from his home to the cable vaults owned by ACD.net, where he also purchased the bandwidth from them. Now, don't go thinking that he was crazy just yet. Now, some of the costs were not in vain. He actually started out by providing internet to not just himself, but to 30 other rural homes as well. Now, leading up to today, he now has 70 customers, and he's looking to expand the network to 500 more properties in the near future. Good for this guy. Now, that, my friend, is why ingenuity and capitalism wins here. Now, you may be wondering, how much is he charging? Well, get this. It's $55 a month for 100 megabits per second with unlimited, uncapped data. But they can actually upgrade, get this, for $79 a month, 1 gigabit per second with unlimited data. Bazinga. Now, this guy is my personal hero. Now, fortunately, there's a downside for Jared. Network equipment costs are on the rise due to the inflation and supply chain issues. Now, he's able to buy used equipment at renewed prices in the past for under $4K, but those costs have risen to $20K or more. Now, either way, I wish good luck to Jared and his venture, and that we see more and more of these types of stories in the coming years as the next generation of internet providers shape the way we do business. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have the News Bites, but before we get to the News Bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's IRL, an original podcast from Mozilla. Now, IRL is a show for people who build AI and people who develop tech policies. Hosted by Bridget Todd, the season of IRL looks at AI in real life. Who can AI help? Who can it harm? The show features fascinating conversations with people who are working to build more trustworthy AI. For example, there's an episode about how our world is mapped with AI. The data that's missing from those maps tells us much more of a story as the maps themselves. You'll hear all about the people who are working to fill those gaps and take control of the data. Now, there's another episode about gig workers who depend on apps for their livelihood. It looks at how they're pushing back against algorithms that control how they get paid and seeking new ways to gain power over data to create better working conditions. Now, for political junkies, there's also episodes about the role that AI plays when it comes to the spread of misinformation and hate speech around elections, a huge concern for democracies around the world. Now, I really like the season 4, episode 1, checking out online shopping. Now, they talk about the hidden costs of shopping online and offline. What are you giving up? In fact, Meta Brown, a data scientist from Amazon, is on the show and talks about what happens when you actually make a purchase online. It just actually may shock you. Super compelling episode. Definitely check that one out. Search for IRL in your podcast player. We'll also include a link in the show notes. My thanks to IRL for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. Show's moving fast. Now, the pandemic has forced us into new norms in the different facets of our lives, right? Our homes are becoming even bigger roles in our lives, as well as, you know, we're working from there, we're living from there. They cater to more people staying home, and, you know, we're doing both things, right? So what this also means for our homes is maybe they might be becoming even more vulnerable in some ways. Well, let's talk about that. As more and more people invite smart technology into their homes, I'm definitely one of them, guilty as charged. And we're also inviting tech that's viewing, analyzing, and understanding our daily lives. Now, think about all the echoes you have, Ring doorbells, Zoom applications that you're running, and any other bank apps. We're giving up control of different aspects of our lives to technology, right? That's where there's even more technology that may help curb the risk. Now, I've used and have home gateways. Home gateways are looking to actually manage some of the risk. Unfortunately, they currently only work with Internet of Things. Now, I have worked with these on myself. I manage the server and the hardware for a lot of pretty much all of my light switches in the house, and everything is kind of managed through a gateway. Now, there also might be a light at the end of the tunnel for outside of IoT things. There's some new legislation that's coming to the table. The new EN303645 Act is actually providing a baseline for all IoT devices. It aims to enforce a level of security as IoT devices are actually brought to the market. Now, developed by the Cyber Technical Committee, it builds out guidance and examples of the application of the baseline and beyond. And most recently, actually, encouraging a formal template to make it clear where the baseline extends or in rare cases where it doesn't apply. The first related standard addressed smartphones and was released at the end of last year. And the next one will focus on smart door locks. That's an important one. The technical specifications will secure physical devices between the in-home network and the public network, as well as the traffic between the networks, and it, which is vital to home security. I definitely know that. Now, Cheebert, I want to bring you in here because, you know, you have gateways as well. We all use gateways. Is gateways really providing the first line of defense for connected devices?
Now, actually, I think the first line of defense really ought to be getting away from sticking all your devices onto a single Wi-Fi network or even a wired network. Ever since I had my wake-up call, actually, I heard it a little before, Dan Gere's keynote address at Black Hat in 2014, where cybersecurity is real politic, was an amazing talk. And I keep referring back to it. I'm going to sound like a broken record. The reality is we got to stop treating our home Wi-Fi, our home networks, as a single pot. Gateways are great, but gateways are run on software that humans wrote, and humans make mistakes. So wouldn't it be better if we go and separate a lot of this IoT gear from, say, the kids doing their homework, or, you know, maybe getting to your home NAS, take your home NAS off that same pot so that when you're doing your financials or you're scanning documents that are confidential to you, that they are harder to get to. Because remember, one of the things that so many people forget, I've had this conversation even at DEF CON, the reality is the vast majority of the malware that's looking for stuff is looking for conversations on that local area network, you know, Wi-Fi pineapples, probes, things like that. A lot of it is just listening on the back end. So if your confidential material isn't in that same broadcast domain or same VLAN or same network, whichever one you want, then it's got less attack surface. So is the ETSI security standard, is it a good start? I think it's a great start. I've been involved with this conversation since, I think 2000, maybe 2001. The standards and talking about implementing them industry-wide have been going on for a very, very long time. I got dragged into the conversation because of a whole bunch of firewall bake-offs that I did for InfoWorld magazine. And there was a lot of talk about using those and creating an organization kind of like Underwriter Laboratories or Consumer Reports, where you go and rate security devices. It didn't come true at that time, but it's starting to sound like it might be happening. I certainly hear rumblings out of California about rating devices and grading them on how well they actually do protection. There's a lot of interesting things happening. Maybe we'll go and start talking about some of the changes in IoT communications and where these hubs are going. What do you think? Shall we go there?
I think so. Right. I think I want to make one last comment about gateways, because I think, you know, even though they are software, they're they still could be vulnerable. One thing I do like about them, maybe this is false security, we talk about being complacent, maybe it's false security, is the fact that I like the fact that all the traffic goes through them and they have more of a localized set of services. So if I want to be like notified, I don't have to go over the public internet to some remote server to get notified of something. It could be just localized here on my home network. So that data is not going anywhere. It's just kind of being populated on my home network. Like you said, it is isolated. They are isolated on its own VNet. But I think the key here is that I just like the fact that that data, whether it's coming from somebody who's at the door or on a camera or unlocking the garage or, you know, that kind of thing, all that data kind of just stays locally. And I like that. Now, I guess that's me being a little bit overbearing with that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of people out there that don't really think about that stuff. Now, I guess that question back to you, Cheever, is that false security for me, or is it, you know, or is it just being a little bit too secure?
Well, I think a lot of it is we've got all these devices. The whole concept of a gateway is spectacular, especially because a lot of the gateways have the option to go wired Ethernet into your home router. So if it's off the home Wi-Fi, that's already reducing your attack surface. Now, my gripe and why I'm hesitant is too many of these gateways are being put out by companies that are adding security in as an afterthought.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm very enthusiastic about the California standard, because they're forcing people to design it in. Now, one of the things I'm going to change gears here is I've been working a lot with LoRa, which is kind of a weird acronym for long range. That standard came out not terribly long ago, and it is wireless. It is a low bandwidth. It's designed for things like door locks and sensors, you know, temperature, water, and things. I actually have one sitting by my water heater, so if my water heater starts leaking, it'll alert me. The cool thing is, even with the teeny tiny antennas on the devices that I'm using, which happen to be from Yolink, they're still good for a quarter mile. And the battery life on those things are ridiculous. You know, one tiny little lithium cell will last a year or more. So I've actually got one of the Yolink sensors with an immersible temperature probe in my pool, so I can actually ask my Amazon Echo, what's the pool temperature? Now, to put it in perspective, you cannot implement a LoRa link unless you're turning on encryption, and almost all the gateways that I've been playing with actually also require it be limited by MAC address. So that's sounding like a lot of best practices right there. And because they're long range, I only need a single gateway for my entire home. Quarter mile is a great thing.
Cool.
But some of my buddies from the University of Waterloo in Canada did some testing in downtown Toronto, and with different antennas and slightly different frequencies down in the 600 megahertz range, they were able to shoot 23 miles through the office buildings. So this is Cheebert doing a little bit of prediction. I think a lot of gateways are going to start happening. I think devices on native to Wi-Fi are going to slowly back away. We're putting an awful lot on Wi-Fi and we're mixing networks. So this achieves a couple of best practices. It's encrypted. It's device limited, MAC address limiting. It's right. A physical separate network. So we're reducing the attack surface. And it's a hub gateway. So it goes on to the thing. And what's really cool is there's actually, I can finally share this rumor. I've been talking to some fairly large tier two ISPs. One of them is actually doing a test run in Denver right now. There's a company that puts public Wi-Fi hanging from the communications cables in between telephone poles, well, power poles, all over Denver. And what they're doing is they're co-locating LoRa gateways with the Wi-Fi. The intent is they want to be able to capture the market so that you can use LoRa to even go lightly underground to hit a water meter, or behind fences and trees and brush to get your electric meter, and so forth right. And so on. I think we're going to start seeing some really interesting things. And this whole separation is great. It's a good best practice. I've gone as far as setting up a doctor friend. We actually set a separate VLAN, separate physical set of ports on his firewall just for when he does work for the hospital, and the kids and the printers and all that other stuff are on a different network.
let me ask you a question, G-Bert. I know that there's, you know, LoRa is one of the standards that's out there. There's obviously Ring has developed their own version of the standard where there's the Z-Wave with, I think, the Z-Wave extended. So I have a single gateway that handles my house for all the devices. But there's also Zigbee. There's, you know, there's a bunch of other standards out there that are trying to do this that are a little bit more prevalent in the industry. What does LoRa offer that they don't?
First off, Z-Wave isn't a standalone. It's actually a variant on Zigbee. So that's one.
Okay.
Their range has actually dropped down a little bit because the Z-Wave and Zigbee are now at 2.4 gigahertz. It's an unlicensed band. The original Zigbee was down at 900 megahertz, so you could get much further with it. I actually was involved with a research group funded by DARPA to do self-organizing, self-healing mesh networks, which is Z-Wave and Zigbee's biggest advantage because they can daisy chain. In fact, my DARPA research project daisy chained fake rocks and fake tree branches deep into the Ohia forest at Volcanoes National Park so that I could relay environmental data and digital images of endangered species out of the deep forest and caves. So that answers your question about what the big advantage is. Being able to daisy chain is a big one. In fact, Zigbee was originally designed by the folks at the MIT Media Lab and has since spun off a company called Ember. It was originally designed so they could daisy chain sensors coming out of wastewater management. And I can't imagine a worse environment for radios, and that's metal with a lot of water. So it's designed for harsh environments like that. It's designed for industrial, but the downside is Zigbee isn't encrypted. Your application has to encrypt. So
see, I think that's
LoRa
where
is encrypted by design.
Right. I think that's where the Ring variant comes in. I think Ring has developed a Z-Wave variant that actually encrypts. Now, like, you can't use their hardware with any other like Z-Wave or Zigbee router or gateway. So I know that. Like, I do know that. But in the same sense, that's they're not following standards. They're just kind of doing their own thing. It'd be interesting to see how, if anything comes out that's using LoRa that's in a similar space.
Well, and the nice thing is LoRa is a very strict standard. And there are bands assigned for various regions around the world. So depending on where you are, you can use different bands. Like, I'm actually using the 915 megahertz range, which has given me a good quarter mile range, even with stub antennas. And I just bought a MikroTik LR9 LoRa gateway that actually has both RS-485 Modbus and LoRa and the capability of using the new cellular standard, which is LTE Cat M1 or LTE NB, narrow band, which is low bandwidth. It's being designed to replace the old 2G modems. And if you can get your data usage down to under 2 megabytes per month, one carrier that I've been working with gets that subscription down to $7 a month, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool. I do want to shift just for a moment because there's another thing I'm interested in. Maybe you have an answer is, you know, if somebody's already implemented all these smart devices on their network, obviously you said, hey, go and isolate them in a VNet. That'll be one secure way of doing this. Second thing is, what's the next thing they can do? Like, obviously, you know, you don't know how secure some of these devices are. They might not be using encrypted channels back to, you know, back to their servers. I mean, I have some devices on from unnamed companies out there. I won't name them, but, you know, I have some devices, you know, some new cameras that I put out there that do call home a lot. What can people do to figure out if these devices are doing secure things?
Sadly, it's a tough question to answer, mostly because there's not a lot of diagnostics that's built into consumer gear. So one of the things you can do is just keep an eye peeled on the statistics coming off your home router. If you've managed to physically isolate to a different network your IoT devices, Most, well, all the home routers that I've ever seen have the ability to at least keep cumulative data rates on different ports, or at least on the WAN. So just like in the enterprise world, keep an eye on whether there's some data spikes. You know,
right.
Same time every month, you know, scribble down the cumulative data coming through your ports. Physically separate. We've already talked about that. Don't use simple Wi-Fi passwords. Keep in mind, you know, war driving still exists. And there's a lot of open source software and, you know, blacknet software where it'll crack a Wi-Fi password very quickly. Obviously, WPA2 minimum, because it's so far it's fairly secure. But use a reasonably hard to guess. I actually use LastPass, which used to be a sponsor. I don't think they're a sponsor anymore. But I actually use LastPass and have it randomly generate obscenely long Wi-Fi passwords just for my IoT gear. And then, of course, I physically separate, you know, everything. I'm going to say that over and over again because it's a really good thing to do. But, yeah, there's a lot of cool things you can do. Most of it's just being aware of what is running. I actually also add a Fing instance. I've got this little round puck that's plugged into my network, and it's a Fing box. And it will actually monitor everything on my network and do a lot of the counting for me. And every time a new device pops up, it will actually text or email me saying, hey, do you know what this is? So I think
I love you that. I might get one of those.
Yeah, it's actually not expensive. And there's multiple versions. The $99 version.
Does it impact your bandwidth at all?
It doesn't use a ton.
Okay.
The only thing that will impact your bandwidth a little bit is it does, I think, a weekly speed test. And that's how I know when my firewall has been attacked enough that it's slowing down and it's time for a reboot. They also have an enterprise version, which is, I think, triple the cost, but it has a lot of really interesting capabilities. It actually combines a lot of really good things, you know, MAC address tracking, IP address tracking, device tracking. It'll actually look up the device by MAC address. So that's kind of cool. So that's actually not a bad thing. You can also do a lot of the same thing just by running Fing on a desktop computer.
Good stuff, Gbert. You know, one thing I do at my place is I basically turn off access to any site, and then I see how many sites get alerted to me that they need access. I see what device it's coming from, and then I, you know, put them on an allow list or whatnot if I want them to go through. So that's how I kind of figure out what's going on. It's not always the best model, but it seems to give me at least an index of you know, what the devices are trying to access, what protocols they're using, and if they're secure or not. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see if that scales out with time. Well, folks, that does it for the Bytes. Next up, we have our guest. But before we get to our guest, we do want to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's userway.org. Now, every website without exception needs to be accessible. Now, Userway's incredible AI-powered solution tirelessly enforces the hundreds of WCAG guidelines that are out there. Now, in a matter of seconds, UserWay AI can achieve more than what an entire team of developers can in months. Now, at first, it may seem overwhelming to make your website accessible, I know, but UserWay solutions make it simple, easy, and cost-effective. And you can even use their free scanning tool to see if your website is ADA compliant. Now, if you have an enterprise-level website with thousands of pages, UserWay offers a managed solution where their team can handle everything for you. The UserWay's AI and machine learning solutions power accessibility for over a million websites trusted by Coca-Cola, Disney, eBay, FedEx, and many more other leading brands out there. Now, UserWay is making its best-in-class enterprise-level accessibility tools available to even the small and medium businesses as well. You get started today for as little as $49 a month on UserWay's monthly plan. If your company can be ADA compliant, reach more customers, and build loyalty. And remember, you get 30% off. Now, there are a billion people in the world with disabilities. That's roughly 13% of the population that you don't want to lose potential customers because you're not compliant. Think about it. By not being compliant, fines and revenue loss will cost you more. Now, UserWay is the leading accessibility solution in the world today with a market share of 61%. That's the biggest in the world. Now, for years, UserWay has been on the cutting edge, creating innovative accessibility technologies that actually push the envelope on what's possible with AI, machine learning, and computer vision. Now, UserWay's AI automatically fixes violations automatically at the code level. So here's some of the things they could actually do. It auto-generates image alts. It writes image descriptions for you. Very nice. It remediates complex nav menus and ensures that all pop-ups are accessible. Plus, it fixes vague link violations and fixes any broken links that are out there. Plus, it ensures your websites make use of accessible colors while remaining true to your brand. And UserWay gives you a detailed report of all the violations that were fixed on your website. UserWay is a fantastic platform. It's platform agnostic and it integrates seamlessly with Shopify, Wix, Sitecore, SharePoint, and many more out there. Let UserWay help your business meet its compliance goals and improve the experience for your users. And the voice of Siri, Susan Bennett, has a message about UserWay.
Hi, I'm Susan Bennett, the original voice of Siri. You won't hear me say something like this too often. I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're looking for. But every day, that's what the internet is like for millions of people with disabilities. UserWay fixes all of that with just one line of code.
UserWay can make any website fully accessible and ADA compliant. With UserWay, everyone who visits your site can browse seamlessly and customize it to fit their needs. It's also a perfect way to showcase your brand's commitment to millions of people with disabilities. Go to userway.org/twit to get 30% off UserWay's AI-powered accessibility solution. Book a short call and get their accessibility guide. UserWay, making the internet accessible for everyone. Visit userway.org/twit today. And we thank UserWay for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twiat riot. Today we have Sachi Thompson, who's the leading global manager for the hardware division of Curvature. Welcome to the show, Sachi.
Hi, Lou. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Now, before we get into the show, lots to talk about here. Our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a journey through tech and what brought you to Curvature?
Absolutely. My journey into the business is actually unconventional in the sense that before I joined, Curvature was previously known as Network Hardware Resale. I had a background in manufacturing, supply chain, and real estate. I actually didn't have a lot of experience in technology, but really had an opportunity to join the company early on. I think I was employee 85. And then from there, it was like joining a rocket ship. We grew globally. And in that process, I was able to bring a lot of my knowledge and skill set to the business, but in turn, learning a lot as well. As we expanded into multiple products and multiple regions around the world, I've really had a wonderful experience being able to make a big impact at this organization.
It's amazing. Curvature is a very interesting organization. You know, we hear a lot about, we cover a lot on the show as well. We cover a lot about digital transformation, people moving to the cloud. You know, what are you guys seeing?
We're seeing actually, that's a push. Clearly, that's what a lot of our customers are doing. What I'm seeing recently, though, is that there's more of a hybrid approach to that, or it's taking them a little longer, or they're more selective about what they're going to go ahead and move into the cloud. Curvature was also acquired by Park Place Technologies in 2020, and they also host and have a multiple of products that allow our customers more opportunity to do more with their environments. So whether they don't want to go into the cloud or they want to monitor them first, our managed services fills in there, and then our hardware division sells the infrastructure, and then our maintenance division provides the uptime for it.
Yeah, I think we should definitely cover more on this show about the fact that, organizations are still maintaining, on-premise private cloud infrastructure. I talk a lot with organizations on a weekly basis that they're still doing that. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you is what are some of the key costs of doing business today when it comes to still managing an on-premise or even a private cloud network? What should organizations be looking for there?
They should be looking for affordable hardware, right? Really making sure there's good security in the environment and, you know, good protection and firewalls and those things. Also finding a good managed solution so that they can remote in and get good, data and metrics on their environment and what's happening. And then mostly too, you know, just making sure that they've got plenty of redundancy there. A lot of the reasons why some of our clients have gone into the cloud and then chosen to go back is that there's a loss of control, right? One, it makes it suppose it's easier. They can create a lot more efficiency and bandwidth, but with a lot of the security issues that have been happening as of late, and more importantly, not realizing how much their own customer base or candidly employee base is pooling and dragging files, it became really evident that those are things that are difficult to control in a provider environment, not knowing kind of how things are happening. And I think too, just kind of with the pandemic and having a remote office environment become really the forefront of really what a lot of companies have been dealing with over the last 2 years, they've had to naturally create a cloud environment quickly, and it's costly. So looking at that too and seeing how to really fit in a good solution where they can have that connectivity, but also have affordable solution.
And one thing that we've seen over the last year, 2 years even, is the fact that, you know, supply chain has definitely drastically changed, some of the hardware spend, as well as the cost of hardware out there. What are you seeing organizations do to kind of adjust to that?
Yeah. So, you know, very similar to the used car market, the networking infrastructure market has seen a lot of that. We've been in the space for 30 years. Our value really has always been that we've provided a solution, just like Brian mentioned earlier on the show, is that we sell pre-owned equipment. And we do it because many reasons. Initially, we were always known to save clients money. What's really been at the forefront over the last 2 years is strictly availability. We have it and the OEMs don't, and they won't be able to for the next year, and they desperately need equipment. So that's been really important for us to see. And candidly, in the 30 years of being in business, we've never quite seen a supply chain crisis like this before. I actually thought it would be caught up by this time. I think we're probably going to see it even out first quarter of next year. But then now there's a lot of discussion around recession. Right? Really needing to be able to optimize environments, create that connectivity, and put that innovation into their environments for a fraction of the cost. And that's just not possible, quite frankly, if you don't introduce a hybrid solution. And so really our clients have stayed with us and partnered with us is that's always been the case for them. They've always needed to find a way to maximize what they're trying to get accomplished for the most cost efficient way possible. And so now we're really just opening that value prop to a much larger audience due to the supply chain situation.
Now, I've always bought pre-owned, renewed devices because I've had great luck with them. I buy them from reputable vendors like Curvature. And so I've had great luck with them. But a lot of people think, hey, I need to buy new in order to get these things to be reliable, have the same warranties. Can you maybe take us through what are some of the true costs of buying new versus pre-owned or rebuilt stuff?
Yeah, so truthfully, when people buy new, there comes with a warranty with the product, but the difference is all of the costs that aren't kind of associated with that deployment, right? Finding the right engineer talent, taking the systems down to deploy that new offering, realizing too that you don't really ever optimize that full productivity of that technology. For example, we have a lot of enterprise clients who just naturally always adopted a 3 to 5 year refresh cycle on complete environments because just told, hey, newer is better, having it there is better, you need to do that. Now, all of a sudden, with the supply chain constraint, we've had these clients come to us and say, I want to change my strategy. I'm actually going to change from a 3 to 5 year refresh to even a 6 to 9 year refresh. What is that going to do to my bottom line? What you find is it's not only a significant savings, but it really shows an organization that these assets can do a lot more work for them if they just keep them there and maintain them. And so what we also do with our partner or our parent company is a lot of risk goes, well, what happens if there's no software available? Or, you know, what happens if it's end of life and it's in this environment and I need access to this? That's really where our third party maintenance offering steps right in. And then in the event that the customer wants even more than that, they want to have professional services or, you know, special reporting or virtual capabilities on their environment, we offer that. And then it really becomes an easy choice, Lou. When you're bringing everything together, we take all the risk out of pre-owned.
It's amazing. Well, we have lots more to talk about here, and I do want to bring Cheever back in when we come back. But before we do, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is IT Pro TV. Now, your IT team needs the skills and knowledge to ensure your business is a success. And with IT Pro TV, more than 80% of users start a video, actually finish it. Now, IT Pro TV is engaging for your team, and they will enjoy learning on their platform to give your team the tools they need to make your business thrive. Courses are entertaining and binge-worthy. Keeping your team interested, invested in learning is important, and IT Pro TV definitely does it. Now, the tech industry is evolving, changing rapidly, and your team needs to be trained today. And when a new release, software release, or system upgrade, or a cyber threat faces your business, IT Pro TV offers the training and perspectives on those disruptions within days, if not hours. It's great. Now, why is IT Pro TV right for your business? Well, get all the training and certifications for your team done all in one place. IT Pro TV has every vendor and skill you need for your IT team training. Plus, they provide Microsoft IT training, Cisco training, Linux training, Apple training, security, cloud, and so much more, a lot more out there, more than 5,800 hours worth, ranging from technical skills to compliance to soft skills. Now, you can do so much more and so much with IT Pro TV business plans. Track your team's results, manage your seats, assign unassigned team members, and access monthly usage reports. See metrics like logins, viewing time, tracks, completed, and more. Plus, easily manage those teams, manage subsets of users or teams by providing them with customized assignments, monitoring progress, and reporting on usage of the platform. Plus, assignments can be full courses or even individual episodes for those courses as well. You actually have advanced reporting as well. You get immediate insights into your team's viewing patterns and progress over any period of time with visual reports. Don't forget that IT Pro TV has individual plans as well. Give your team the IT development platform they need to level up their skills while enjoying the journey. For teams of 2 to 1,000, volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise and make sure to mention Enterprise 30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. And we thank IT Pro TV for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Sachi Thompson. She's Global Manager of Hardware Division of Curvature, about renewed hardware, about on-premise networking. But I did want to bring Cheebert back in because he's an expert here. Cheebert?
Actually, my big question is, you know, I've worked with Curvature and I've seen a lot of the benefits. You know, I first met one of Sachi's engineers, Gerard Power, at Interop. And we got some great experience building some really big network stuff. But I think what a lot of people don't realize is Curvature is dramatically different from, say, Joe's Network Salvage Shop down the street. Let's talk a little bit about the differences, because I know it's not just hardware. Gerard was an engineer, and he was at least as good, maybe better than some of the OEM manufacturers. You guys have a lot of talent on your staff. Let's brag about them a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right, Brian, where we work and the employees that work at Curvature are very unique. A lot of them come from us out of local universities. UCSB is in our backyard. We get a lot of great talent from the computer science programs, even at the local college level. And when you become an engineer in one of our factories or in our operations centers, you do thousands of hours on every platform. You have to test 1,050 phones before you can move to the next level of an access point, and thousands of those units. And so, and because the product that we sell to our customers is a pre-owned solution, we know that that customer's making a buying decision truly on trust and choice. So we don't have the luxury of failure. We can't deliver a device that isn't working or operable when they open the box, so that they don't look at us like Joe's electronics store down the street or buying something on eBay. It is a like new experience. It's fully tested. Not only do we do that, but we allow our engineers an environment where anything and everything that we sell, they have testbed and they can work on it, touch it, they understand it. But then we collect all of the data in the environments around all the platforms we sell. So we know the field notices or the issues or compatibility issues. So the extent of being able to work in our operations center and the knowledge base you need to know is very large. And then equally, it dovetails nicely when they go out and they work in the field. And they're working on environments rather than learning in a manual or maybe having a few hours or hearing about certain products. A lot of our engineers have physically touched them, worked on them, and configured them for our clients. In fact, Brian, a lot of our customers use us to do all of their technical configuration. In the past, I'd say 5-6 years ago, just running the operation centers, I'd send 20 boxes to a customer and a team of 4 or 5 IT engineers would meet on a Friday and they'd work all through the night and set up the environment and test it and then have go live on a Sunday. We do all that work. We actually set it all up, build it all out. We ship it on a freight pallet and one guy meets it and plugs it in and it's operable and working. We've created technology too where our clients can remote in from their living room. And that was really huge during the pandemic, if you can imagine. No one's getting on a plane. People need to make sure that this replacement device is going to work, needs to be configured. That was really leveraged considerably, but that's just something we've always done. That's really kind of one of our major differentiators is that the quality of the product we sell is at a very high level. There's no one out there like us.
Yeah, well, I've actually been your customer going on 30 years now. No, 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to be in charge of the Pacific for GSA Office of Information Security. So you've not known my name, but you've known my purchase orders.
I do.
But
I do.
One of the things that I noticed on your website is there is a very long list of ISO certifations. Why does that make a difference?
Makes a huge difference. That's another big differentiator for us in the space is that I love being validated by third-party outsources that tell us what we need to do to keep a standard, both environmentally, quality-related, and security-related. People hate audits. I love them. I welcome them. I'm incredibly proud of how we run our operations floor. We don't make anything. The people are our company. And so when these auditors come through and they walk through the experience, they see, wow, you guys pretty much act and treat your business like a manufacturer. But Brian, we have to in order to troubleshoot an issue or a customer problem. So I hate customer issues, but they happen and we make mistakes. But it's brilliant to be able to pull up the log and walk that customer through the widget, how it happened, what happened, and what we did wrong and how we're going to correct it. The other thing that's really key is we're global. So I have distribution centers in Amsterdam and in Singapore and in the United States just on the hardware side so that I can ensure that I can deliver a product within 24 hours anywhere in the world. And if a customer receives a box from us in Europe or in Asia, it'll be exactly the same as if you received one from Hawaii.
Cool. Well, I've got one more question.
Absolutely.
And you touched on a little bit, and it's how do you deal with end-of-life products? Some people want them. You know, in fact, that's what I did for the U.S. Marines in Okinawa. I ordered end-of-life products because we needed them. But what about people that are allergic to end-of-life? How do you help them upgrade, shall we say?
Yeah, so people who are end of life, and like you said, I'd say a majority of our core customer base uses that as a strategy, which means they remain them, keep them there, especially our manufacturing clients, our retailers, things that these are workhorse appliances that really stand the test of time. And so what we do with those clients is we offer redundancy, we provide 24/7 maintenance to really ensure that keeping that asset in that environment can continue on and be fine. Those that want a refresh, we always offer refresh. In fact, what we typically do too is we'll get a bill of materials from a vendor, right? A large networking vendor. And we'll actually talk to the client more about what are you trying to accomplish? What are you doing? What's your roadmap in the next 2 years, 4 years, 5 years? And because we're vendor agnostic, we could really solution something that saves them money, gives them all the compute they're looking for, but is outside of just that one brand solution. And that's also really unique.
Cool. Well, I'm going to brag just a little bit. Let's talk about the Interop project. At the time, it was the world's largest temporary network. Mm-hmm. And that's how I met Gerard. But that's where I also met an awful lot of Curvature engineers and was really impressed at how fast those pallets arrived. Yep. What's behind the scenes? Who else do you have in your dugout, so to speak?
So we have several engineers in all of our operating plants that allowed us the ability to pull that equipment together and ship it out around the world. And so we were really excited about being a part of that project. We have just-in-time equipment. We carry all of the equipment that we sell readily available. And so that also allowed us to put together an entire network for that show in a very short period of time. It was comprised of all of our run rate equipment that we sell.
Super cool. In fact, I'm using some of your equipment on the research vessel, Kila Moana. It was a very nice donation. Thank you so much. And Curvature has been supporting the world's deepest underwater observatory. But Mr. Liu, I think we're just about out of time.
You're very close. We're getting there. We're super close. I did want to ask one more question before we closed up. Now, one thing that I want to do is channel a little bit of Curtis out there regarding security. Now, we continue to see a lot of advanced attack vectors that are coming towards organizations, especially over the pandemic. People are extending their networks to home, but they're also trying to beef up the local on-premise network, so people connecting to them are more secure. Now, what you're seeing from an organization perspective, where are people actually upgrading there to make things more secure, to also enhance things like micro-segmentation and so on?
In our sector, we definitely see a lot of investment around firewalls, around all of the managed capability and just adding more of that technology around it. Part of our Park Place technology group has an ESO division that runs all of that security and kind of manages that environment with a lot of consultative work. And we've got a resident expert on staff there, and they provide a lot of knowledge and intel around that. But also too, sometimes, Lou, if those environments are too critical, that's not necessarily an area where we'll want to step in and help, right? That's really what we'll say. You need to have the latest and greatest and edge technology in those environments just so that you can have access to those real-time updates that are just happening so frequently. And so that's the other thing too that you'll find with Curvature is that we'll really be more of a solution for you, that if we don't feel like it's a good fit, we'll be the first ones to tell you.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being here. Unfortunately, we're running low on time, but I did want to give you a chance to maybe tell the folks at home where they can go, learn more about Curvature, maybe even get started, get in contact with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So curvature.com is where you can reach us just to see a list of our products and offering so that we carry. And Park Place Technology is our parent brand as well. So you can learn more about our maintenance offering and our professional services. And if there's anyone that's in need of networking equipment, even like your previous story that you mentioned about the cost of gear going up, please reach out to us because I know we can help. And we've been able to do that and even more so than ever in the last 13 months. So we really try to make sure that we can provide good value hardware for our customers.
Thank you so much for being here, Sachi. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone.
Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, Mr. Brian Chi. Thank you so much for being here. What's going on for you in the coming weeks? Where can people find you? Where can people reach out to you and get in touch with you?
I'm still working with a buddy of mine in Honolulu on lighting up a wireless internet service provider. And we just did just about finished the project of running the Neil Blaisdell Center, providing network connectivity with wireless backup so that they could provide point of sale, ticket sales, and so forth. Lots of fun. And yes, we do buy used equipment, or pre-owned equipment, sorry. You know, in fact, I think Saatchi might want to consider suggesting to management that they do a booth at Wispapalooza, which happens to be one of the largest wireless internet service provider conferences in the United States. And trust me, WISPs are always short on cash, so finding quality pre-owned gear is probably going to be very welcome to those folks. But anyway, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your comments. I'd love to hear your show ideas. I strongly suggest you hit me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab, and I'll try and respond as quickly as possible. And as I find more information about what the little bird told me that happened at Black Hat, just as it becomes verifiable and not just rumor, I'll start sharing that. I'd love to hear show ideas. Love to hear your questions. Anyway, if you want, you're also welcome to email me. My email address is Cheebert, spelled Cheebert at twit.tv. Or you're also welcome to send email to Twyatt at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. Look forward to hearing from you and love your questions. Take care.
Thanks, Cheebert. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show and get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you'll find all of our amazing back episodes, the show notes, co-host information, guest information, and the links of the stories that we're doing on the show. But more importantly, next to those videos there, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download link. Support the show by getting your audio version or video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcast applications, because we're on all of them. So definitely subscribe and support the show. Plus, you may have also heard, that's right, we also have Club Twit. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. It's only $7 a month. It's cheap. There are a lot of great things about Club Twit. One of them is the exclusive access to a members-only Discord channel, Discord server, and lots of, you know, hosts that you can chat with on there, producers, separate discussion channels, a lot of discussion channels, plus special events that happen on there. I love listening to those every week. So lots of fun and discussion things happen in there. So definitely join Club Twit. Be part of this movement. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. Plus, Club Twit now offers corporate group plans as well. It's a great way to give your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. The plans start at 5 members. That's right, just 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month. And you can add as many seats as you like and keep adding them. And this is really a great way for IT departments, developers, tech teams to really stay on top of and access to all of our podcasts that we have out there. Plus, just like regular memberships, you can also join the Twit Discord server as well as get that Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So definitely join Club Twit at twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends, your family members, your coworkers with the gift of Twyatt, because we talk a lot about fun tech topics on this show, and I definitely guarantee they will find it fun and interesting as well. So definitely have them subscribe. Now, after you subscribe, if you're available, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time, we do this show live. We're doing it right now live. That's right. You can check that out at all our streams at live.twit.tv. You can check all the live streams that are on there. Plus, you can come see how the pizza's made, all the behind the scenes, the banter, all the fun stuff we do here on Twit. So definitely check out the live stream. And also, if you're going to be part of the live stream, you might as well be part of the live chat room as well. We have an irc.twit.tv chat room. There they are. Lots of great characters in there. There's some reoccurring people, but also lots of new people. And each and every week, we have a lot of great questions and conversations, and we get a lot of stuff from that. So definitely join the IRC channel. Thank you to everybody who's in there. You really make the show possible. Definitely hit me up. I want to hear about all the things you're doing in the enterprise and IT at twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my enterprise tidbits. Plus, I also have great conversations with people like you. Definitely direct message me if you can. Show ideas, things that we should cover on the show, things that you want us to talk about more. Definitely hit me up there, and we will definitely have a good conversation. But if you want to check out what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft, definitely check out developers.microsoft.com. Microsoft.com/office. There you'll find all the latest and greatest ways for you to customize your office suite. That's right. You can customize it with code. You customize it with macros, automation, whatever you want to do. Check that out. It will really help you guys do more work, be more productive on that office suite. So definitely check it out. Now, I also want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week. So thank you for their support. We couldn't do the show without them. I want to thank all the engineers and staff on Twit. They really make it possible. Plus, I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. That's right. He does all the bookings and the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Cheever, again, for all your support. Before we sign out, I want to thank our editor for today, Mr. Anthony. He makes us look good after the fact. He makes us, cuts out all of our mistakes. So thank you, Anthony, for doing that. Plus, our TD for today, he's our talented Mr. Ant Pruitt, who also does a fabulous show here on Twit called The Hands-On Photography, which I learn something each and every week. I sometimes watch the shows over and over again so I can go back and learn it again. So what's going on this week, Ant, on your show?
Well, Mr. Lou, thanks for watching each and every week, my man. This time on the show, I go through some listener feedback. They sent in some images, and I gave them a bit of critique and some tips and tricks to help, you know, make that image look just a little bit better, you know, because we can all use a little helping hand from time to time to really help our photography shine. Thanks for watching, brother.
Love that. Thank you, Ant. And until next time, I am Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that Twit now has a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.